Here, I'm taking more calls for a while. I want to return to Exodus tonight. And we left off in the 15th chapter. With God unable to find the way to Elam, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees. Did he ask to take them out in the wilderness of Shur for 3 days where there's no water, tomorrow where the water's bitter? And we learn from that chapter God wasn't lost at all. What the book of Deuteronomy says, that God led them into the wilderness to try them and see what was in their heart, is what is actually happening. He knew where Elam was, with 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees. But he was going to test them first at Marah. And if he hadn't, we wouldn't have learned another dramatic picture of the work of Christ to sweeten the bitter waters and provide healing. Now, the 16th chapter opens. And they took their journey from Elam. It's always victory and problems. Victory and problems. And victory and more problems. As if God didn't practice that kind of treatment enough on these people, he's still doing it. If we could just stayed a little longer. And, you know, you count the verses. It seems to me like there's more verses on these misery parts. Well, he gets one verse on Elam. They came to Elam, the last verse of the 15th chapter, where were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees. Just getting your tan straightened out. And God moves them on. And they took their journey from Elam. And all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin. Which is between Elam and Sinai. On the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of Egypt. 2 months and 15 days. The adequate witness of grace manifested, they end up in the wilderness of Sin. I can do something with that, but I'm going to go on for the moment. The whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. First time I've ever heard of people murmuring in the wilderness of Sin. They may do other things in the wilderness of Sin, but they don't murmur in the wilderness of Sin. These are weird people. Well, if you're going to leave the 12 wells of water and the 70 palm trees, where else would you go except to the wilderness of Sin? We're people. Well, you know, there never has. There never has been a congregation different than this bunch. If this congregation is different, it'll be the first. Never has been a congregation different. I've studied congregations all my life. I used to travel from church to church. They're all the same. Just like these Israelites. The distinguishing marks of every congregation can be found right here in this book of Exodus. God ended up hating them. Killed them all. So there ain't much hope, is there? I mean, something better happen to produce a congregation somewhere, sometime, that's different. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children, they're only 2 months and 15 days. They were spared the worst of the plagues. Their firstborn were spared the night of the Passover. They were all healed as they ate the roasted lamb, so that when they came forth out of the wilderness, their Psalm 105 says there was not a feeble one in their midst, much less crippled. Wasn't even a feeble one in their midst. They stood still and saw the salvation of the Lord as God parted the Red Sea. Danced a jig on the other side when they saw the Egyptian army drown. I mean, even Schwarzkopf more compassionate than they were. Schwarzkopf said he hated to see anybody die, but at least there were less than 150 casualties on our side because they were so aggressive against the other side. And these Israelites didn't hate to see anybody die. They danced jig. They saw the Egyptians drown. Pharaoh sank in the sea like a stone. Hoopy-doo-da-day. Where's all this Christian hypocrisy when you see your enemies die? Man, I could name a whole bunch of people I'd like to see anchors tied to and thrown in the depths of the sea. I mean, I like Schwarzkopf. I think he's the current American hero, but he's just smart. He's just smart. He's got a conscience and he's compassionate. But I don't really think he cried that much over dead Iraqis. That was the politic thing to say. But when you look at that road with them, killing them like the whole road looks like a train wreck. Feel sorry for some of those people that die carrying their stolen goods out of Kuwaiti City. After what we know they did in Kuwaiti City, I wish they could die three times. Everybody on the road should have died three times, resurrected three times, so you can kill them over again, three different times. Too much hypocrisy running around the country. These chosen people of God here, they didn't cry over the spilled Egyptians. But 3 days later, they're murmuring against Moses, saying, "What can we drink?" God provides the water. And they have 2 months and 12 days at the oasis. Now they go into the wilderness of sin, and every one of them starts murmuring again. With that background of blessing, the children of Israel said unto Moses and Aaron, "Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt." When we sat with the flesh pots. Are you touching that at all? And when we did eat bread to the full. For ye brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. I'm not sure you're thinking right with me. You know, that's a nice casual reaction to give a mocking awe. Remember my first remarks. Every congregation is the same. The only thing that makes you different is the Spirit of God. Which these people obviously didn't have in them. The only way you'll get the Spirit of God is faith. This book of Exodus is the greatest mirror to look into that Christians can find anywhere. You don't have to work to be like this. This comes natural. This is the way you look when you get up in the morning, before you put the makeup on. Ah, this couldn't be me. I live in constant awareness that if these people would stone Moses, every pastor better keep his guard up. This is the natural Christian life. Up when God's good, bellowing when God's withdrawn his mercies a little distance. Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt. Just think of that. You dirty rat God, you brought me out here to die. Why didn't you kill me in Egypt? Would to God he had translated them back to Egypt, put them by a flesh plot in the pot and said, "Get ready." Would to God I'd have gone broke before I made this pledge. You want me to say that again? Would to God I'd have gone broke before I made this pledge. Not a fine mess you've gotten me into, God. Look where faith gets you. Where are these glasses? I mean, you know, somebody gave me in that poor away country where it was so hot you couldn't wear shirts with pockets. And I kept losing my glasses. So somebody gave me one of those things you wear around your neck to stick the things in. So I stuck the things in it and been wearing it for a couple of days. Turned on channel 40 today and saw full crotch wearing one. I cut that thing into 1,000 little pieces. I haven't got anything against Paul Crouch. I just ain't wearing one of those things around my neck anymore. You hearing what I'm saying here?
Yes, sir.
Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat for the flesh pots. Before we ever took a step of faith. God shouldn't teach, shouldn't treat people who take steps of faith like this. If God's going to kill you, do it by a flesh pot. What a way to go. Not in the wilderness of sin. God's going to kill you. Do it when you could eat bread to the full. Nothing like dying on a full belly. When I was stuffing myself, that's when to die. When I was using everything I had for me. I mean, if I'm going to die, let me die gorging myself and spending it all on me. Don't let me die out here when I've made the sacrifice of following God. I need a black church for this message. I mean, you honkies don't know how to respond to good preaching. I mean, I've wasted some of these good messages on you people that sit there with a stone face. You ought to be on Mount Rushmore, permanently inscribed in rocks. Ain't no black faces on that rock. Only a honky can stand there forever and never have a expression on their face change of any kind. Through hot and cold weather, excitement and dullness, always the same. Give me a witness. God shouldn't treat you this way. Should be led into the wilderness of sin with flesh pots. What's the fact? God shouldn't have tricked him like that. If he hadn't worked all those miracles, it wouldn't be out here in this place. It wouldn't have followed him in the first place. God's been doing me that way for 50 years. He works just enough miracles to get me going and then drops me. Just drops me like a rock in the wilderness of sin. Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord before we ever built the fountain of faith. Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord before we ever moved downtown. Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord before we started Secret Five. And if I could take you to that place. Would to God we'd die there before we do something else. Well, I can tell you it's a good place to die. Would to God I'd have stayed there. Now, you're the only reason I came back, you dirty, rotten so-and-so. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't be here. If it weren't for you and God, I'd be by those flesh pots. I had three or four of them picked out. Right, boy? I ate bread to the full, too. Now, I'm going to leave us there to see if you'll call me. And I ain't ever getting out of this wilderness of sin if you don't get on the telephone. I'm in the 16th chapter of Exodus. Frankly, amazed, but not amazed. You don't have to take any more calls. How characteristic of most congregations. How quickly we grow dull to what we've seen God do. The miracles of deliverance. The Passover, which typified the events that we commemorate this week. The death of Christ fulfills the Passover. The deliverance through the Red Sea, the sweetening of the waters at Marah, the provision of the wells of water and the oases at Elim, the proof of God's leading. Yet how quickly, when he leads them from Elim into the wilderness of sin, they begin to murmur, and all the children of Israel said, "Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt." You think you got some kind of standing with God when you're in that frame of mind? You're going to kill me, God. That's obvious, but would to God you'd do it where I enjoy myself. It's just, it shows how stupid you get when you get on the devil's side and listen to him in opposing God's leading. It doesn't even make common sense. Just think about it. When you really think about it, it's a lot harder to die by the flesh pots and where you eat bread to the full than it is in the wilderness. Common sense tells you that. You want to die in paradise? Far better die in a place you want to leave anyway. Just think about it now. These stupid idiots. Take me to a place I don't want to leave so I can die there and leave it. But don't kill me in this place I want to leave. Don't let me leave here. Put me where I don't want to leave so I can leave a place I don't want to leave rather than leave the place I want to leave. That's about how ignorant your murmuring is. I could go to Deuteronomy. The Lord led them into a wilderness to prove what was in their heart. Well, I want you to notice something, and it will become more apparent as we go through this book of Exodus. God's very tolerant at the outset. They murmur in Egypt. He continues to work his miracle acts to deliver them. They murmur and have no faith at all in front of the Red Sea with Pharaoh charging down on them. God says, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. And he does it all. They murmur at Marah. And the Lord shows Moses a tree and sweetens the water and reveals himself as a healing God and takes him to an oasis. They go into the wilderness of sin and they cry out, would to God the Lord had killed us in Egypt. And we sat with the flesh pots and ate bread to the full. Well, by about then, I'd be ready to kill them dead. Then said the Lord unto Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you. And the further we get into Exodus, the more you're going to see God's patience begin to wear. The further we get into Exodus, the more you're going to see God start to hold them accountable a bit more, and then a bit more for their murmuring. As you start the walk of faith, God is more tolerant with that tendency to turn on him when the test comes than he is after his track record gives him the right to expect that you expect him to be as he is instead of turning on him so quickly. Which is another way of saying to some of you that have been in this walk of faith these many years and been taught as richly from God's Word as you have been taught, God expects more out of you. God is a respecter of persons. Well, where you get this stupid nonsense that everybody is homogenized down to one level when it works to your advantage. This syndrome of the Apostle Peter. Peter, you're going to die. What about John? So what's going to happen to him? Why is it you expect so much from us, Pastor? We've been given and given and given and given. Why do you expect so much? Because I'm godlike. Got it? You can't get away with some of the things these other yokels in the Christian community can get away with. Would to God you'd stayed a fundamentalist. Would to God you'd stayed a heathen. Would to God you'd stayed a Catholic so God could have killed you in that state. Instead of leading you out here into this wilderness of sin with a cigar-smoking pastor that never lets up on you. They really didn't do much. Well, finally, we're going to get to Kadesh Barnea. It'll take about 3 years. We're only 2 months and 15 days now, you know. It's going to take about 3 years. You've had 15. Don't get smart with me. You've had 15. These people wore God out in 3 years. And they didn't do much when they got to Kadesh Barnea. All they did is the giants there. I mean, before you get too carried away in your condemnation, how'd you like to go home tonight and meet Tyson on your doorstep and have it out with him? much? But they had seen much. They had seen God perform sufficiently that the giants shouldn't have looked as big to them as they did. Didn't bother Caleb and Joshua. The land was exactly as God said it was. And the spies reported that. Truly it is land flowing with milk and honey. It was exactly in the place that God had said he was taking them. And I repeat, looked exactly like he said it would look. Just giants there. And all they did was wait one day. And they sang the same song again, said, would to God we had died in Egypt. They had a thing about dying in Egypt. I mean, here, the would to God we had died in Egypt 3 years later. Would to God we had died in Egypt. Just another way of saying, would to God we hadn't started and taken the first step of faith. Just stay where we're at. We're in bondage, but let's just stay there. We ain't going nowhere, but let's just stay there. We got a great memory. Our fathers, Jacob and Isaac and Abraham. I mean, we're a third-generation church. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We're the church that came out of Ur of the Chaldees. We were God's instrument to even save Egypt from famine. Not too many churches can claim 430 years existence. That goes back as far as the King James. Would to God we just stand pat. We've got a cathedral, we've got fancy Bibles. It's obvious you haven't had to take up any offerings to buy the cathedral. Let's settle on our lease. Not move anymore. Who needs Secret Five? You're 62. You should spend the next few years working out a death plan, Doc. Wouldn't be no wilderness of sin. But just stand pat. Stand pat for Jesus. Hold the fort, for I am coming, Jesus. Wave the answer back to heaven by thy grace. Wave the answer back to heaven. You know, you're going to heaven back ass forward. Would to God we died in Glendale. But the Lord at this point, and that's the point I'm making, he put up with it then. It's amazing. It almost makes me mad. God treats them better than he treats me. lousy people he treats. But they only 2 months and 15 days. You that have only been listening to me and only come into the walk of faith 2 months and 15 days, you're going to get off easy for a while. But you old-timers that have been getting mad because it's always you that has to push it over, same hard core of people, you're called upon to do the job. Cheer up, it'll get worse. I can't remember when God was this good to me. Way back. When I could murmur and God would say, "Behold, I'll rain bread from heaven for you." That's enough to make a murmur out of you. And the people should go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or no. There goes God ruining everything he does. And it shall come to pass that on the sixth day they shall prepare that which they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. Weekly miracle. What they get on the sixth day, they prepare is twice as much. Moses and Aaron said unto the children of Israel, all of them, "At even, then ye shall know that the Lord hath brought you out of the land of Egypt." Now, ain't that something? They're going to find out the Lord brought them out. They don't know it yet. All those miracles in Egypt, parting of the Red Sea, sweetening of the water. But these dumb heads still don't know the Lord brought them out. Told you it's like every congregation I've ever seen. Congregations have an ability to go stupid once a week. At least once a week. "At even, then ye shall know that the Lord hath brought you out from the land of Egypt. Because the Lord rains bread down from heaven. And in the morning, then ye shall see the glory of the Lord. For that he heareth your murmurings against the Lord. And what are we that ye murmur against us?" And Moses says, "This shall be, when the Lord shall give you in the evening flesh to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, for that the Lord heareth your murmurings which ye murmur against him. And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord." You might remember that. And God's going to agree with that later on. Because when he decides to wipe them out, after they have consistently murmured against Moses and against Aaron, God's going to say they've been murmuring against him. God's going to agree with that. "And Moses spake unto Aaron, say unto all the congregation of the children of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he hath heard your murmurings." Can't you see him? See, I told you it'd pay off. "And it came to pass, as Aaron spake unto the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked toward the wilderness. And behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. Speak unto them, saying, at even ye shall eat flesh, and in the morning ye shall be filled with bread, and ye shall know that I am the Lord your God. And it came to pass that at even the quails came up and covered the camp. And in the morning the dew lay round about the host. And when the dew that lay was gone up, behold, upon the face of the wilderness there lay a small round thing, as small as the hoarfrost on the ground. And when the children of Israel saw it, they said one to another, "It is manna." Manna simply means, what is it? It is, what is it? Well, it's a whatchamacallit. Manna means, what is it? Eat it. What is it? It's, what is it? Eat this, what is it? For they wist not what it was. And Moses said unto them, "This is the bread which the Lord hath given you to eat." Why does God not give you bread that looks like bread? Why dump this stuff all on the ground and call it bread when it's a what is it? God keeps dumping these whatchamacallits on us. He calls it bread. "This is the thing which the Lord hath commanded. Gather of it." This, what is it? Gather a bunch of this, what is it? "Every man according to his eating. An omer for every man." About 6 pints. "According to the number of your persons." Take about 6 pints apiece. This, what is it? "Take ye every man for them which are in the tents." And the children of Israel did so, and gathered some more, some less. And when they did meet it with an omer, he that gathered much had nothing over, and he that gathered little had no lack. I mean, some guys went out there and just rolled in it. Gathered a big armload. The time they got to their tent was about 6 pints. Some of them just sort of delicately got a little fingerful. Time they got to their tent, 6 pints. That ought to taught them something. That'll scare you to death, man. You put something in your mouth, change the sizes like that. God tests your faith every single step of the way. You think God's been teaching you things? And Moses said, "Let no man leave of it till the morning." "Well, I only eat 5 pints, Lord, and tomorrow it might not be any. What is it? Tastes pretty good when I ate it. I'm going to hold a pint over in the morning, just in case God misses the ground." I mean, you never know about God. He doesn't know which way's up. You know, God will send it to Mars tomorrow. Mars or Venus. He might forget which way to Earth. You know, he couldn't find those 12 palm trees. Or those 12 wells and 70 palm trees. I mean, you know, thus far, God hasn't proven you trust him very much. He just wanders around this wilderness and he don't know where he's going. Moses said, "Let no man leave of it till the morning." I'm boring you. Get on the telephone. Now, we have joined another group in this half hour. And I'm teaching on the book of Exodus. Something I've wanted to do for a long, long time, because all the bad traits of every congregation that God has had to deal with since he's been trying to lead people out and return them to following his ways all the bad traits you meet them in this congregation in the book of Exodus. And you have an opportunity as you study the book of Exodus to either be like most of the people who only saw God's acts and never came to know his ways, or to be like Moses and come to know God's ways. And there's nothing complicated about that phrase. You live with somebody long enough, you gain the ability to say, well, that's the way he is. But that's the way she is. Some people live with God all their life, never come to know the way God is. They keep projecting onto God their ways and trying to talk God into being like them. We can all be thankful that God is God and he changes not. But aren't you happy with the way you call when the music starts? I've already said, I only came back because of you. And I'm starting to wonder if I made the right choice. Now get on the telephone. You know, we're going to have to take any more calls. When you're in the desert, better be at Elim. That's the natural view. Better be at Elim than at sin. Now, of course, I could treat the word sin as a pun and have fun with it. And in the previous half hour, I think I probably did. Probably about it, I did. But Elim means trees. Sin means clay. Now, in the natural, if you're going to be in the desert, which they were, better be where the trees are. Instead, out there in the exposed area of clay. And this congregation knew nothing of the ways of God. And this whole trip is supposed to teach them what's wrong with them and what's right with God. And teach them to know God's ways and to trust him. But they flunk every single class. You say, well, boy, if I had him as a teacher, I wouldn't have flunked. We have 15 years. How many times have I said, after every victory, expect what? And the devil catches you flat-footed after every victory. Trees just look better in the wilderness than clay. But in the 16th chapter it says, they took their journey from Elim, trees, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, clay, which is between Elim and Sinai. Now, I don't want you to view Sinai at this point in this Exodus series in the figure of Galatians, where we've referred to it so often by analogy to Abram's producing Ishmael, but see it in the type of this Exodus journey now. Because Sinai means dedicated to the God of sin. Now, if you stay in the pun frame, it's going to hurt your understanding. But if you stay in the frame of sin being the exposed area of clay, and what God did to provide for them in the wilderness of sin, which was a great deal more than he provided for them at Elam. In the wilderness of sin, the manna is introduced, the miracle provision from God. In the wilderness of sin, the quail are provided, the miracle provision of God. And Sinai means dedicated to the God of sin, or the God who proves himself to be what he proved himself to be in the wilderness of sin. He's leading them to that place where, more than any other place, he's going to reveal himself at Sinai. But Sinai is dedicated to the God of sin, or the one who showed himself to be their provider in the wilderness of clay. You don't learn at Elam what you learn at sin. But can we stay a few more days by the 12 wells and the 70 palm trees? The children of Israel gathered the manna, the whatchamacallit, the what is it? And Moses said, let no man leave of it till the morning, notwithstanding they hearkened not unto Moses, but some of them left of it until the morning. What's wrong? I mean, God gave it to us. You know, it's like the tithe. I know it's the Lord's. Let me hang on to it a little bit. Isn't it so funny that some of you that have been saving up your tithes ain't got any of it? Just rotted away. God's ways. It's not even very economical of God. I mean, you know, if you let us save a little from yesterday, he wouldn't have to rain so much down today. God's ways, not man's ways. Moses said, let no man leave of it till the morning. Well, I had 6 pints and wasn't hungry tonight. I only ate 4 pints. And it's good stewardship to hang on to that 2 pints. What's wrong with preachers like Moses? They don't understand business. Moses needed some businessmen to help him and God preserve some of that. What is it? I mean, what is it's pretty rare, too. You don't waste what is it. What am I supposed to do with it? What is it? If I only ate 4 pints of it. What am I supposed to do with the other pints? Save a little. God would have lost all of New England this first day. There ain't no way a Yankee would go along with this. Wasteful. Let no man leave of it till the morning. Clean your plate, kid. Maybe that's where the custom started that my granddad used to beat on me about. You clean that plate. You'd ever bite of that. I
I don't want to.
You eat it or I'll stuff it down your throat. Well, Grace, that's why it's so hard to diet. I'm not to blame. It's my granddad. God's will right here. Right here in the book. Eat what's set before you and get rid of all of it. You know, some people gain weight on 6 pints, some people don't. Everybody eats 6 pints. Now this slim fast business here. Notwithstanding, they hearkened not unto Moses, typical congregation. Some of them left of it until the morning. I'm smarter than the rest of these dumb yes men. I saved some of my what is it? Can't hardly wait to get up in the morning and look at my what is it jar. I put my what is it jar under my pillow and I can't wait to wake up in the morning. Put it under my pillow. It bred worms and stinks. What it says right here. Some of them left of it until the morning and it bred worms and stink. How could God give you something that'll bred worms and stink? Straight from heaven. Took it only one day to breed worms and stink. You better pay your tithe when you get it, friend. When the Lord says something's His and tells you to do something, you better do it then and there. Today, if you hear His voice, harden not your heart. You don't give your bank account AIDS. Moses was wroth with them. I like him already. I hate these pastors that grin at you and say, you shouldn't have done that. Doesn't say what Moses did. But wroth is a pretty strong word. He's madder than hell at him. Pastor Moses. And they gathered it every morning. Every man according to his eating. And when the sun waxed hot, it melted. And it came to pass that on the sixth day they gathered twice as much bread, 2 omers, 12 pints for one man. And all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses, I warn you. And he said unto them, this is that which the Lord hath said. Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake that which ye will bake today and see that ye will seethe, and that which remaineth over lay up for you to be kept until morning. And they laid it up till the morning, as Moses bade. And it did not stink, neither was there any worm therein. You know what's wrong with most of you? You don't believe any of this. That's what's wrong with most Christianity. They don't believe any of this. If you believed any of this, look at it. Straight out of heaven comes this, whatchamacallit. This, what is it? And you'll find it tasted like honey when they ate it. Straight out of heaven, just something they never saw before, falls on the ground. They gather it, always the same. They eat it, they can't keep it over a day. Then when you come to that which for this people, who were in training and typifying until the Sabbath rest, the life of faith was made possible by what Christ did. Then God works the miracle for those who conform to His word. On the sixth day they gather it, And by contrast, it doesn't breed worms and stink. And they get a double supply on Friday. A God who can do this can keep his word with your supply. The Lord's the provider. It's the same God who in Elijah's day is going to make the pot of oil continue to flow. Who after the widow gives to the prophet first of the one meal she had will continue to eat every day. Same God says, bring you all the tithe into the storehouse and prove me now herewith. See if I don't pour you out a blessing you can't contain. Not do it, you're going to curse all that you have. What good if they gathered a house full of the manna, if God cursed it, and it was in violation with his way of doing things, it bred worms and stank. And the very same what is it could last over till the next day when they were conforming to God's way. If you don't believe this, I wouldn't pay tithe either. If you don't believe this, I wouldn't do it God's way either. This, whatchamacallit, from heaven provided a miracle. It was a miracle. God multiplied it. Come this sixth day. And you don't think that if you do it God's way and pay him first, he can't take what you have and multiply it? The Bible's full of this issue. There is nothing that gets to the heart of trust or faith like that which involves your survival and God's provision for it. You go out, you bring in much, and I put it in bags with holes in it. What God said happened to them in their... Well, they work hard, they bring it home, but it's in bags with holes in it. Why? Haggai says. Because you're looking out for you first and God second. You put God first, he goes to work on you. I've said it 1,000 times, not a line in God's book, not one. Nowhere does God indicate at any time he is going to provide for his house or his church. He provides for you when you provide for his house. A preacher who says, oh, God, meet the budget of our church, is a fool. I've never had a prayer meeting in my life, in my ministry, for God to provide for the church support. That's just not the pipeline. He designated you his spigots. And you close the spigot on the outflow end, he's going to close it on the inflow end. He opens the spigot on the inflow end to give the insight through his gift ministries to teach his word, and I open the spigot and flow it out to you. And you that have been taught, then you are to open that spigot of God's supply to you and flow it into his house and his ministry. It's the way God works. But I can't afford it. I mean, I've had one day a hunger before God showed up and by golly, this one bite of this, what is it? I'm not going to trust God, considering the fact that he took me from 12 wells and 70 palm trees to this miserable place, and somehow or other my murmuring got this, what is it, on the ground. I ain't going to risk it. He'll do it tomorrow. And I got it now, and I'm hanging on to it. In fact, I'm not even sure I'm going to eat 4 pints. I'm going to take a bite of 1 pint and save 5 7/8 until tomorrow. You're lucky you got me, God. Some of these people are going to blow it all today. But 6 pints will last me 6 days. I'm a good steward. You're a fool. God's the supply. I had to take him into the wilderness of clay to teach him that. And give him meat and bread same day. But don't you think, and this is what the wilderness of clay teaches you, if God doesn't provide, you're going to starve, man. And don't you think that when God is truly the provider, down to, by the flesh pots in Egypt, you didn't learn that. Didn't even learn it at the wells of Elam. But when you're out there where you ain't got nothing unless God provides it, don't you think you ought to get along with the provider? I mean, pretty obvious where it's coming from. Yeah, you want 2 of my pots? You want me to eat it all? Man, give me 2 spoons. But here, centuries later, with mountains of evidence of God's ways, and the lesson of this stiff-necked people who wouldn't learn from God, and 2,000 years of God's grace, we still are arguing with God about his ways? Pretty foolish. Get on telephone. I'm in Exodus chapter 16. God has provided the manna after he led the children of Israel into the wilderness of sin, which means clay, between Elam and Sinai. Elam means trees. They left the shady spot and the oases into the wilderness of clay. Begin to murmur there, and God provided the manna, but he's also teaching them. They weren't to leave it over. They were to trust God to provide daily. That's the point. Now get a little flesh and blood on these verses of Scripture, and you don't have to take any more calls. You're out there in that desert. You got a family to raise. You've got your kids to look out for. And you're just learning the ways of God. And you murmured and complained, and God's rained this funny-looking stuff down from heaven. This whatchamacallit, it's on the ground. You gather it up, take it home, and you're told to not save any of it. Use it all up today. Well, how do you know God's going to provide tomorrow? Well, he said he would. Well, fine, I'll keep a couple of jars just in case. A couple of pints. If he shows up tomorrow with his what is it stuff, I'll just gather 4 pints. And we know the end of the chapter as we read the Bible, you don't put the flesh and blood on it. They got the same decision you got when, well, I just ain't got enough to pay tithe. You're the one that ought to pay tithe, man. You need God's help. Most Christians don't believe the Bible. Is it any harder for God to multiply what you have, provide miracle provision? Is your decision any tougher than this mother and father who's, by golly, we didn't have anything and God's provided this. And there's me and Mom and two kids and 24 pints. And we're supposed to get rid of it all. Don't save anything. And trust God to drop this, what is it again tomorrow? And after 6 days of it, then he throws another curve at us. Saturday, you gather twice as much and bake it, lay it up till tomorrow, some of it till tomorrow. You can eat it the way it is or you can bake it, you know, it's your choice. If you're going to do any baking, do it today. But save till tomorrow because there ain't going to be any on the ground tomorrow. God can turn it on and turn it off at will. And Moses said, eat that today, for today is the Sabbath unto the Lord, that which you save. Don't go out on the Sabbath, because if you go out in the field, the what is it ain't going to be there. And it came to pass that there went out some of the people on the seventh day for together. By cracky, no, what is it? Every congregation is the same way. They got twice as much. You figure it out. First time ever they get together twice as much and it doesn't breed worms and stink. Next morning I got a cupboard full to start with. But I'm still going to go out and see if I can get some more. And most of you sitting there know which ones of you would be up tomorrow going out gathering if it was you. I mean, if I go out today and can get some more, I can invest this extra 6 pints for the Lord. And old Pastor Moses, when he has another secret coming up, I can help him a little more than he. I'll surprise him. And the Lord said unto Moses, you know, this is what makes me mad. You dirty rats. At times I'd like to sick James Cagney on my congregation. You know, it's a two-edged sword. You, these people didn't really complain against the Lord. They complained against Moses. And God took it personal. Then, but the other side of the coin is, when they did things, God jumped on Moses. I'm getting tired of getting jumped on because of you. The Lord said unto Moses, how long refuse ye to keep my commandments and my laws? Moses never went out there looking for anything on Saturday. Those people did. I'm here tonight. Some of you been out gallivanting around. Just came in. Turn on, see if old Scott's there. What's going on tonight? You dirty rats. God gets on me because of you. I understand why Pastor Scott gets so mad at his congregation. You can tell how far from God most pastors are. God never gets on to them about their congregation. He knows it's a hopeless task. I mean, God's, you're so out of step, God's been beating on me all day, and you know that that scatology travels down, and I believe in passing it on. And when God gets on me, I pass it on to you. Why am I getting mad at you so often? You can know when I come in here ready to kill, you've been doing something wrong because God's been trying to dump on me all day because of what you've been doing. I can tell by noon how well my congregation's performing. By 3 o'clock, I hate every one of you. By 9 o'clock, I'm ready to kill you. The Lord said unto Moses, how long refuse ye to keep my commandments and my laws? Was that another thing? See, for that the Lord hath given you the Sabbath. Therefore he giveth you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide ye every man in his place, and let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. I'll bet you that these verses are very mild alongside what Moses said to them. I mean, this is the same guy who's going to come down from a hill after breaking the tablets that God's own hand had written on, tear the stuffing out of their golden calf that enshrined their gold jewelry and break it into powder and put it in a soup and make soup out of it and make them eat it. There ain't a man of God in the Bible that acts the way most people want their pastor to act. The kind of pastors most of you have are hirelings. They're more worried about you than they are God. God ain't been on their case in years. He knows it's a hopeless case. There ain't no such thing as a perfect congregation. And it goes without saying, there ain't no such thing as a perfect preacher. But God's ways are, he works with his congregation through his gift ministries. If you get out of step, he gets on me. He gets on me till I get on you. If your pastor hadn't got on you recently, God ain't been getting on him. Because God knows either he or you are hopeless, or both. Ain't it wonderful that I'm still getting on to you and God's still getting on to me? There's hope. Hope's for you. Too hot in here. I'm burning up. See that the Lord hath given you the Sabbath. Therefore he giveth you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide ye every man in his place. Or more literally, stay within the camp. I don't want to catch one of you leaving the camp to go out in the field to see if you can sneak some whatchamacallits. Do it God's way. And the house of Israel called the name thereof manna. And it was like coriander seed, white, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. Now, why is it God ain't been making manna all these years? There ain't nothing that tastes that good. Nothing that... I mean, just reading that makes me want to eat it. I mean, everything tastes good ain't good for you now. God's ways are pretty good. He gave him something that was so nutritious it carried him for 40 years and it tasted good. Of course, they got tired of that too. Oh, this old light bread. It was white. So much for these nutritionists making you eat that old gravelly wheat bread. These health nuts. You notice most of these health nuts are sick all the time. You ever notice that? Here's your verse of scripture. Next time some know-it-all health nut comes around and says, don't eat that white bread. Eat some brown bread. The name thereof was manna, and it was white. White bread. I'm going home and throw all the whole wheat bread out in the garbage. Do it God's way. And Moses said, this is the thing which the Lord commandeth. He's going to demonstrate again. Out here in the wilderness of clay, God is showing them some things. From nowhere, he supplies daily. They're going to learn to trust him day by day. He's going to break the pattern and double it on the sixth day and provide nothing on the seventh day. If they try to cheat a little and keep some over, it's going to breed worms and stink. Then he's going to show off now. So you take, fill one omer of it. To be kept for your generations, that they may see the bread, white bread, wherewith I, God, have fed you in the wilderness, when I brought you forth from the land of Egypt. And Moses said unto Aaron, take a pot, put an omer full of manna therein, and lay it up before the Lord to be kept for your generations. As the Lord commanded Moses, so Aaron laid it up before the testimony to be kept. And this same manna that they couldn't keep over one day, except on the sixth day, without it breeding worms and stinking, God decides, I'm going to show that when I say this omer is going to be kept for generations, it'll last for 40 years. Most Christians don't believe the Bible. He rains it from nowhere. When he doesn't want it kept over, it breeds worms and stinks. When he wants it kept over one day, it doesn't breed worms and stinks. And when he wants it to last for 40 years, it doesn't breed worms and stinks. And what kind of God are you serving? That you can't recognize God's provision, give him the first fruits, which are his, give him the tithe, which are his, and believe the God that could provide the manna can do what he said he'd do to those who bring the tithes to the storehouse. Bless you with what's left. The children of Israel did eat manna 40 years. What's 365? Well, let's go there years. What's 360 times 40?
14,400.
How many? 14,400. Days, incorporate the sixth day where he doubled it, and for 40 years, every single day, the what is it came down. Forty years until they came to a land inhabited, they did eat manna, until they came to the borders of the land of Canaan. And then it measures out what an omer is, a tenth part of an ephah. Now ask yourself the question. Would to God the Lord had killed them while they were in Egypt by the flesh pots, where they could eat bread baked at their own hand, or go into the wilderness of clay and learn the wonder of God's provision and His faithfulness to His word when you do it His way. I can tell you, God doesn't want anything to do with people that don't have the ambition to learn how to walk the trusting way of faith. That's what makes this church different from other churches. What makes the Truth House different from other churches. What makes the other churches that are forming across the land daring to follow the example of moving in faith. I'm still learning God's ways, and I don't ever want to stop. And if it means leaving the flesh pots and the full bellies and the wells and the palm trees, I want to be led by the God of sin. Learn to trust Him. I've only started in the book of Exodus, but you get on telephone.